Good afternoon, everybody. So I think the title of the talk is great. We're all with the government, and we're all here to help everybody else. So I look forward to talking with you all this afternoon. I always like this quote, the destiny of a nation depends on the manner in which it feeds itself. And I would sort of ad-lib a bit more to say that certainly how we feed ourselves is certainly dependent on how safe our food supply is and what we can do to minimize the threats to our food supply that we can recognize and deal with. This is the cover of the Emerging Infectious Diseases from April, and I always enjoy looking at these covers and reading what's written by them. And this was actually Grant Wood, Spring in the Country, 1941. Grant Wood really enjoyed painting the pastoral Iowa sorts of scenes. And this really shows, you know, what, as you all recognize, was food production in the past. Very simple way of life. The woman hoeing, the young men, they're just putting seedlings in the ground. And in the background there, you can maybe see the horses that are plowing in the field. But we really recognize that food production has evolved quite a bit since, well, it was really the 30s, I think, when it really started to evolve. You know, we went from the horses to the tractors. We went from the rural to the urban setting, and then of course we had World War II, which presented a lot of more challenges in terms of producing a safer food supply. So just a second here. So instead of having this nice scene where you really could just kind of eat what was produced there in your backyard and life was certainly simpler, this is what we have today. Much more of a complex food supply. And I'm showing you this as part of a traceback diagram because I'm going to come back to the issues of traceback diagrams in a few minutes. But it's also illustrative of the fact that, you know, your food from where it's produced at that, you know, let's say the farm level through the many production, processing, manufacturing facilities, distribution chains, till it really ends up at that retail level or restaurant level or wherever it's going, goes through a lot of different chains of transmission. And, of course, as we all work together to try to identify what may be the causative vehicle in an outbreak investigation, this is the complexities in which we have to work. And certainly one of the things that really slow us up in these outbreak investigations as far as looking at these the whole traceback efforts. Sorry, I keep pushing the wrong thing here. Okay. For those of you who don't know me very well, actually, I worked in Maine as a state epidemiologist for several years before assuming this position at FDA. And they had this saying in Maine about everything being wicked. Well, they have wicked problems. And so I think it's a good way of describing perhaps what we have to deal with together as we confront some of these foodborne investigations. So wicked problem means it's complex, it's tangled, it's difficult. Solutions are not easy. Everybody's got a diverse opinion as to what to do, and perhaps a traditional approach may not always work effectively as we confront some of these challenging investigations. So I would say that Albert Einstein coined this pretty well when he said that we cannot solve today's complex problems using the same thinking that created them. Is certainly very, I think, appropriate to where we're going today as we approach the new tools that we potentially have for foodborne investigations. Steve Ostroff commented on the Food Safety Modernization Act yesterday in his comments, and just want to reiterate that the Food Safety Modernization Act, number one, is to certainly advance public health. For many of those who are not within the Food and Drug Administration, I know you don't recognize the FDA as actually having public health as our primary mission. We're regulatory number two, but definitely public health is what we all hear, and it's what we all certainly believe in, but it's also based on a preventative approach. And certainly the reasons that we go about conducting these foodborne investigations is, yes, to get that causative vehicle off the product, off the market shelf, remove it from commerce, but certainly is to try to learn what we can from those investigations to put preventative practices in place. And the Food Safety Modernization Act talks speaks specifically to the necessary leveraging and collaboration that's necessary. An integrated food safety partnership is what you hear, and certainly that's, again, very appropriate as we all view our work together, whether it's the public health, regulatory, agriculture, laboratorians, all of that data coming together, what's so integral to our investigative process. So looking ahead to what some of the challenges are or what we have learned from some of the knowns and unknowns, I'll get back to some of these investigations in a minute, but certainly we can perhaps learn from some of the large retail establishment types of outbreak scenarios, such as we saw with Chipotle this past year. We continue to identify old vehicles, see new vehicles that can potentially be implicated with illness, sprouts. We've continued to see investigations that and outbreaks that make us really question whether or not sprouts can ever really be a product that's safe for human consumption. The whole world of frozen foods that we've seen a record number of recalls on this past year, this past several months, because of the threat of listeria. Is one of the largest recalls that we've ever seen in FDA. I think there was another recall announced today with this product. I mean, as you keep going back in time with some of these frozen foods from this CRF firm from Washington State, it's really incredible to the extent of some of these recalls and the amount of food that's implicated. The newer vehicle, flour, we're just finishing them up. Another sugar toxin producing organism that's associated with a General Mills flour. Again, more recalls associated with that. And although we've been tantalized by flour in the past few investigations, beginning with that Nestle cookie dough scenario back in the, I think, 2006 or so, we actually were able to culture this particular lots of flour and actually get the organism out, the first time we've been successful in doing so. And you know, what we have to do as far as really, I think, changing our consumer messaging. We know that consumers thought that they shouldn't be eating a raw dough product because of the potential risk of salmonella enteritis in eggs, but I'm not sure that consumers really understand that flour in itself is a raw agricultural product. Is something that really can be contaminated. And when you think about how the wheat is, transported in open trucks to mills where it's really processed in open environments, open to who knows what is coming into those facilities, it's probably small wonder that flour is going to potentially be contaminated as well. We recognize that there's regional contamination concerns. We've all heard about the Delmarva scenario going back to 2002, ongoing outbreaks of Salmonella Newport 061 pattern that's associated with tomatoes and other products in the Delmarva. We tend to see these leafy green outbreaks in the spring and the fall as they transition from Yuma, Arizona, back to Salinas, California. We're not really sure what's going on in that, but we tend to see these, again, these shiga toxin organisms proliferate in those transition periods for reasons that we're trying to better understand. Of course, with some imported foods, we know that we've been inundated with the ongoing cyclospore investigations these past several years, going back to 2012. FDA was able to get an import alert in place for cilantro from the state of Puebla, Mexico last year. It's a seasonal import alert, but I don't think that the sanitary conditions that were identified in Puebla are unique to Puebla. They're undoubtedly prevalent in other areas of Mexico, and I'm not so sure that cilantro alone that may have contributed to these outbreaks. So we're entering the 2016 cyclospora season, and we know that we've already got about seven cases that are just recently been reported this past week, and we'll see where we go with all of that in the future. Indonesia, current we see the tuna contaminated not only with salmonella, but paratyphi organisms, and those sushi eaters in the crowd, beware if your tuna supply is from Indonesia. And, of course, really where we're going with the whole world of whole genome sequencing, We'll be talking more about this, but it's really opening up a whole world in front of us as far as really trying to help us better look at outbreak investigations and how that will enhance the whole outbreak process. Just want to look at a couple of investigations for a minute. You know, the whole Salmonella Puna investigation, this was an investigation that went on from July of 2015 till about February of this year when CDC finally pronounced it over. Over 900 cases, certainly one of the larger investigations of Salmonella, again, to date. And just want to point out that if you look at that right up, that right upper corner there with that traceback investigation, that's the perfect traceback investigation. That's what you want to see, where all those, you know, points of service go back to one distributor supplier, which was there in Baja, California. I wish we could get there more often. We don't. But when we do get there, we can certainly put the appropriate import alerts in place, do the appropriate actions as far as getting that product off the market. But, as many of you know, we continued to see cases that went in, that continued after mid-September when this whole thing should have been over. And we worked together with the states and CDC to try to figure what was going on with this fat tail of the investigation. From a regulatory perspective, we looked for other products that might be coming across the Mexican border. We looked at cucumbers being imported. We enhanced our sampling at the border. And really, there wasn't much else there that we could explain it, except perhaps for the fact that heavy retail contamination undoubtedly led to, although the product may have been pulled from market shelves, when they pull the product at the retail level, they're probably not cleaning thoroughly, and hence you put new product in there from a different area, and you're probably contaminating that product in the process. So we realize we've got jobs to do, work to do, to get that message out to our retailers about what to do to enhance sanitation techniques when you've got a recall in place. My time is quickly running out here, but Salmonella Vircha with its raw meal replacement this year, imported products, again, that we were dealing with, but, again, complex ingredients, raw ingredients that are not heat-treated. We found Salmonella Vircha in a moringa leaf powder from South Africa. We found different, and as well as other different Salmonella serotypes. The spinach powder that was part of this product was another Salmonella enteritis group D from Hungary. So, you know, trying to look at these many ingredients in a complex product and looking at the whole processing, which is a little bit more complicated here, but only shows the spinach and the moringa powder as far as trying to take a look at what finally goes into one product, which certainly presents its challenges. I just to say with Chipotle, that in itself was a year like no other. We recognize that in a 14-month period, we saw six multi-state outbreaks linked to a Chipotle that were multi-location and five outbreaks at single Chipotle locations. In comparison, we didn't see any other outbreaks associated with other retail establishments, you know, McDonald's, Taco Bell, Subway, all the rest of them. And although norovirus accounted for the bulk of the outbreaks at single locations, we really saw a combination of salmonella and chickotoxin organisms with some of these multi-state outbreaks. Try as best as we could. We never really got to the end of this one, despite everybody's best efforts, probably collinearia of ingredients. Only 61 ingredients totally sold by Chipotle that were available, and just it was just so difficult, especially if there was potential cross-contamination here at the retail level, to really pinpoint one potential vehicle. Unfortunately, my time is out, so I guess I better give up here as far as addressing this, but just to say that we really do value, we are very critically dependent on all of you for all the work that we do together, and look forward to some more engaging, challenging, interesting times ahead as we confront the next novel sorts of food vehicles in the future. So thank you.
All right, we do have a few minutes for questions for Dr. Gensheimer, if you have them. If you do come to the mic, introduce yourself and answer questions. There's got to be questions.
There's got to be, because I gave up a few minutes.
What's going to happen with cyclospora this year?
Oh, well, Dale, unfortunately, they didn't give me a crystal ball with my job, so I can't tell you. But the fact that we're starting to see cases and the typical time period in which we see them. It remains to be seen. It's tough, as you all know. We don't have, some way of typing cyclospores. We do with, let's say, other Salmonella serotypes. So what you see in Texas, is that related to what cluster might be occurring in Iowa? You know, we've not been able to define that. We do actually have, laboratory technique, Farmly, that's been developed by FDA to be able to look at food. However, saying that, we know that we can only probably look at about 8 food specimens a week. So that's a bit of a, that's better than where we were a few years ago. So we're getting there laboratory-wise. There is some work in progress to better differentiate, these organisms. And we're hoping that whole genome sequencing might be something that we'd be able to put in play, but that's still not for this year. And so hopefully we won't continue to be frustrated. We'll actually be able to find something. But if it's going to be Mexican-style restaurants where everybody has tomatoes and cilantro and jalapeno peppers in their salsa, to really tease that apart and say for sure that we think it's linked to a specific product, it's going to be challenging again.
Other questions?
Question/comment. So the Yuma salinas link. So I'm from Arizona, and we work a lot with the food safety people down in Yuma and the College of Agriculture. So they basically pick up their entire operation and move it from Yuma and Salinas and back. All the equipment gets moved. A lot of the people move. But I would just say, if that's something you guys are interested in looking at, I know there are researchers that are there right now that are trying to kind of explore those things and looking at worker health and safety, and also tracking where people are going and pathogens and other kinds of things there.
Well, great. I appreciate that. There's a lot of environmental issues that go into this, too. That Salmonella Puna investigation with cucumbers, the theory there is that perhaps it was some of the really heavy rainfall there in the Baja California area that may have just really done something to the whole surface environment. We're suspecting that in Delmarva area. And so what goes on with that Yuma-Salinas transition, I think maybe some environmental issue as well. It needs to be identified. Thank you.
I was just wondering, with the Chipotle outbreaks, if there were lessons learned or if Chipotle shared with you some of the changes they made to try to prevent recurrences of what happened. The only thing I personally noticed, they no longer make sliced lemons available for you to squeeze into your water, which I guess would help with norovirus. But I just wondered if there was anything else that they shared, or if they kept that all secret.
Well, no, they've been very open, actually. And I was really impressed with Chipotle, as I think CDC was. We met CDC, FDA, FSIS, met with Chipotle executives on several occasions. In the first meeting that we had together at CDC, I was amazed or impressed with Chipotle that they were open as they were. They acknowledged that they recognize that cross-contamination undoubtedly took place within the retail chains, that they need to do a lot more with that. They said that they had always thought that, that local food was the good food, the fresh food, the most flavorful food. But they had kind of overlooked one key thing, which was food safety. And it's actually amazing to me that, I don't think Chipotle's alone. So many of these CEOs just don't think about food safety. And as Jack Azach loves to say, anybody can, if you any other degree or any other profession, you have to have a license to practice. Anybody else can just say, I'm going to produce food now, and not much training is really necessary. So, they were hit hard. They get the fact, they get understand now that they've got to do more to deal with it. And so they acknowledge that, that they had the same sink that they'd be, dealing with their raw chicken and raw beef, and same bowls without really rinsing them out before they put the produce in the same bowls that they'd be, marinating their beef in. So they've tried to make a lot of changes at the retail level to try to limit that, but they've also done an incredible amount of employee training, such as if you've got norovirus symptoms, maybe you ought to go home rather than staying there at work, even if you're the manager.
All right, I think we have to move on. Thank you again.
Thanks.